Hello, and welcome to the Paul Cardall Podcast.
Did you know the best way to support your favorite musician is to bypass social media and go to their website and subscribe to their mailing list? Please show your support, particularly for our host. Go to Paul's website and subscribe, followed by other artists you enjoy. Visit www.paulcardall.com.
Well, you understand it. So lay it out for us. How do we get, like I'm wearing a John Varvatos jacket. I love John Varvatos. He kind of does the rock and roll vibe. It's kind of a dirty, classy look. And I saw his product and I'm like, you know, I'm a instrumental, peaceful pianist. It doesn't necessarily fit me, but I need to wear something that shows I'm still fun.
Like cool.
Yeah, that's a good word. That's a good word.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on the podcast. I'm so happy we were able to follow up from the Wix event that we did. I thought that was super cool. And I saw that you had a podcast. I was like, wait a second, I should come and talk to him. So I'm happy to be here. So for your listeners, my name is Kadeem Alfonso Fife, and I am a New York-based designer, consultant, and an author. I'm super happy to talk about fashion, to sort of dive into that with you. I mean, going back to your code, I think that the part that you're getting at there is about like personal style and personal expression. Yeah. And how you can use like clothing to express to the world something about you. So what you were saying with this like John Varvatos leather jacket, you're trying to signal like, yes, I do. I'm a classical pianist and I'm this and I'm that, but I'm also like cool and accessible. And so the fashion sort of lesson there is that everyone associates leather with something. Like we're like, oh, leather, like you're a biker or you are like rock and roll kind of thing. And so yeah, you knew to pick up this item to show to the world that you, that this is like a part of your personality. So I think that's the takeaway there that I have always used. Well, I've always used fashion as a way to express myself, but I think that as a designer, I like to give my output, my creative output to the world is mm-hmm. giving people the option to access something, like some part of their personality by wearing this dress or wearing a jacket or a pair of pants or like, you know, using color, silhouette, and fabric to express parts of our personality. So that's like, I really love fashion for so many reasons, but that's one of the main ones that I get to be a part of that process for people. Like yeah. I get to, if I create something and I know that, you know, if I create something beautiful, I get to give it out to the world and then people get to wear it and interpret it in their own way. And like, you know, let's go back to your jacket. You could wear that with like a white shirt and that signals something different than wearing it with like a button down. Or shirtless or something. I don't know. You know, you can give off different things with different pieces. But I love being a designer because I get to sort of like go into people's homes, not personally, obviously, but my creative work gets to go into people's homes and then it gets to be worn in their bodies and goes out into the world. Yeah. And so I sort of like my viewpoint on the world gets shared all the time on other people's, you know, by virtue of it being worn on other people.
And that's the influence that you have in people saying, you know, hey, I want this, I want that. But technically it's you with all your expertise saying, yes, but let's cultivate this. You're editorializing in a way exactly. So that they're a lot more presentable and professional, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, I try to design across like multiple categories. So I was in the activewear space for a really long time, which just they were the first job that said yes to me. So I was like, I will come work for you and make women's leggings. But my main aesthetic or like the thing that I love to do the most is made to order pieces. So I'll make like wedding dresses or mother of the bride dresses, reception gowns, basically like anything that's special occasion. Yeah. And so I really love like going on this journey with people to create something that's one of a kind for like a once in a lifetime moment. And so then I get to, again, be part of these once in a lifetime moments. And it's like, remember when you married X person, or remember when you had this birthday, what were you wearing? You were wearing like,
yeah,
the five original. So.
So I've got a lot of random thoughts as we go along, because you say women's activewear, and my wife is in the gym like 2 to 3 hours a day. And you see something like Lululemon. Lululemon is everywhere, to the point that I was spending time with a drummer named Ariel. He's Puerto Rican. He's in the band Unspoken. Mm-hmm. And he's a bigger guy. And he's like, I just wear Lululemon because it's cool and it's comfortable. Yeah. It's like going out in your sweats, but it's still fashionable. So what is it with a brand like that that catches on?
Well, for sure. I mean, they definitely like Lululemon. I'm very familiar with all of their products, and their because I, you know, they were sort of they're a leading brand in the activewear space, and I think that they were kind of one of the first to do athleisure really well. So like that just means like, yes, you're wearing a pair of sweats, but it is sort of elevated with like the fabric or the silhouette to make it look sort of like comfy casual, but more casual than comfy, if that makes sense. So I mean, I think that the reason that they've done so well is that they just have extremely high quality fabrics. Their workmanship on their products is amazing. Their branding and their marketing is great. Like they, when you think activewear or athleisure, you immediately think Lululemon. I don't know how long that's going to last, but that's what the case is right now.
Well, yeah, it's the what comes and goes.
For sure.
You know, because now we're seeing women like my wife, and even women that think they can wear anything, and I don't want to get in trouble with what I'm saying. But you know, I wear things I should not be wearing. It's a fact. Thin, tight pant legs. And it's not for the dad bod. But we're seeing a lot of people wear the like they just got out of the gym, even though they didn't even go to the gym.
Well, right. Well, the trick there, you can always tell when someone has not broke a sweat.
I wasn't trying to go there. But.
No. Well, it's like, you know, I'm all for anybody wearing whatever they want to. But there are times like I'll like be running an errand or something, and I'll just like throw on my Lululemon sweats or a pair of leggings or something like that, and like a sweatshirt, and I will never wear that outfit with flip-flops, because then that exposes the fact that I did not in fact go to the gym. So I'll wear it with sneakers, and I just put on the full look. It's like, if it's gonna look like I am running errands post yoga or post like a HIIT class, then I'm gonna make sure that I have all of the accoutrements to go with the outfit. So I think I mean, I love athleisure. I think it's like just comfortable, and I think that you can dress it up and dress it down. You just have to know how to do it well. But I think like in the American market, lots of people wear athleisure. Like everyone just, you know, is going to wear sweats or leggings because it's comfortable and it's easy. So why not?
Yeah. People are going to dinner parties now dressed like that.
So that's unfortunate, but hey.
So also another random thought, we have a congressman that goes to Congress.
Fetterman?
He looks like he just got out of the gym, a dirty boxing gym. What's up with this?
I feel like someone asked me this recently. Oh, yeah, someone did, but it didn't make it to air. But anyway, I'll answer it this time. I, like, do not agree with that at all. I think that you need to dress for, well, I was going to say normally the quote that I say is you need to dress for the job you want, not for the job you have, but he is currently not even dressing for the job that he has. Like I think it was like 3 weeks ago, there was a resolution for about the dress code. They've since rescinded it because they were like, no, that's BS. Like you are a congressman. You're like, you are holding a position of high regard. Like your constituents, yes, I know they voted you in while you were wearing sweatshirts and sweatpants, but now you're like in the House of Representatives, and I'm gonna need, wait, is he a senator? Yeah, he's a he's a representative, or is he a senator?
I don't know. I'm not a politician.
I hope that he's a representative, because if he's a senator, that's even worse. But he, it's the point is he holds a position of high regard, and I think that just like you and I would be expected to show up if we were doing a speech or presenting in a corporate setting, we would need to wear a suit or wear like a blazer or something nice, even if we were wearing jeans. Like, you don't show up to church wearing, you know, looking like a schlub. Like, I think that you should dress dress, especially if you're in a role of like dignity, you should dress like a dignified person. I don't need him to like show up in a three-piece suit every day. I feel like that's probably reaching for the stars, but he could wear like a nice pair of jeans or slacks and like even a t-shirt, but just like look nice. Like Jim Jordan wears, like, he gets called out a lot about his the way he dresses, because he doesn't wear jackets. It's like his little protest or something, but I think it's like more of him so that he feels like one of the people. He wears like a rolled up collared shirt and like rarely wears a tie and wears khakis. That's fine, but basketball shorts and a sweatshirt, I don't think so. I would just like never, I wouldn't be caught dead in half of the things that he wears, but I certainly wouldn't be caught in Congress wearing any of those things.
Yeah, it's a sign of disrespect, but it's for some reason, I just don't want to see more of that happen. We already have enough problems with our politicians. Let's at least have them dress nice.
Like at least look nice. Like at the bare minimum. Yeah. So.
Wow. Okay. So, some of the other styles that you've worked with.
I mean, oh yeah. So I was saying that I really love doing the made to order, the special occasion wear. Those are typically. Those are typically women. So my specialty and my aesthetic is in the women's wear, in the women's wear market. But I also, one of the big highlights that I, you know, one of the big projects that I worked on this year was I created a custom blazer for one of the producers of New York, New York. Mm-hmm. One of the Broadway producers of New York, New York, for the Tonys.
Good for you.
So I got to create this look for the Tonys, which was like amazing, like dream come true kind of thing.
Oh yeah. Top of your game right there.
Yeah, like that was like, okay, I mean, I know that I'm very good at what I do and I have had some other great accolades, but this one was like, oh, like no one can take this away from me. Like my piece that I, you know, a piece that I created that I handcrafted and like spent several hours, you know, beating and, you know, embellishing, was worn to the 75th Annual Tony Awards by someone who was nominated for 9 Tonys. Like, that's part of my resume now.
That's amazing.
And yeah, no, so it was really cool. And it got really good feedback. Like, he was texting me during it, was like, everyone keeps coming up to me asking who made my jacket. I'm like, make sure you tell them who did so that you can send them my way. But for me, that was like a really cool full circle moment, because I was born in Queens, New York, and my parents like immigrated here from Jamaica. And I think like the whole story of New York is about how it's a melting pot of immigrants and people who have, who come from different cultures. And I love the song, New York, New York, the Frank Sinatra version, obviously. And I feel like getting my first sort of award show to be linked to that show just made it seem like, you know, this is something that was maybe like destined to happen for me. Like, the first thing that you're going to do is going to be New York, New York, which is basically a play about your parents' life, you know? So that was really cool. And he's like a friend of mine. So that was another thing. Like, he came to my book launch and was like, oh, by the way, I just got nominated for some Tonys. Do you want to do this? And so that was my first, like, my first journey into menswear for more dressy stuff. I had done menswear for like active and athleisure.
Yeah.
I've done a bunch of men's collections, but this is the first time that I got to create something custom that's one of a kind and super special and like meaningful. And I love when fashion has meaning. Like, I don't, I can design clothing that doesn't have a meaning. I can just design a, you know, design a piece that needs to sell or whatever based on what the client like needs. But I like creating stuff that like means to me and means something to the person that's wearing it.
That's gotta feel good though. Just to, to be in New York and to have that experience, it's a total vindication of your dreams.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. Like, I felt vindicated, and I felt there's this, you know, I think as creatives, we often want to be validated.
Constantly.
Like, I'm sorry, I need to be told that I'm good at what I do. But I went through a period of transition this year where I didn't really care so much about people saying it to me. I just wanted the work to be able to speak for itself. And I feel like that is the point where I'm at now, where my body of work is starting to expand. And, you know, we all know that you're only, for at least in my world, you're only as good as your last show or your last performance. And so for me, I was just like, let me just try to stack up some, get a string of really good performances so that I'm continuing to be good. But that was a major moment. Like, no one will be able to take that away from me.
No, it's epic. When you get those experiences, it's an out-of-body experience because it comes and it goes so fast. And then you want to tell everybody about it, but you want to remain humble. But, you know, it's this amazing thing. But you have a book called Threading the Needle. Do you talk a lot about this type of stuff in the book, the process? There we go.
Yeah, the book is called Threading the Needle, A Fashion Designer's Guide to Successfully Launching Your First Collection. And I published it, self-published it in May of this year. And thank you. And yeah, the main goal of the book really was to, one, talk about my personal and professional journey, but then also to use it as a detailed roadmap for designers or entrepreneurs or any creative kind of like wanting to join the fashion industry, to give them a detailed roadmap to take their creative vision from initial concept to market. And so I go through like seven key overall steps, and then I break them down.
That's great.
Where I'm basically just like, do these steps and this will take you from point A to point, from A to Z. And my whole thing is like, as a designer, I always want to be an inspiration, but I wanted something tangible. Like, okay, here you go. You can get an ebook, a paperback, or listen to me on the audiobook version, but it's something that you can go back and reference if you get lost on your journey. Like, instead of me just like doing a speech one off and you like took some notes, this is something you can go back and it will help you, and it kind of helps you avoid some of the pitfalls that I have made. So I've learned from my mistakes, and you know, whatever, like life is, you know, a series of successes and mistakes. And so I wanted to highlight those things and be like, this is the real, like, I'm going to, you know, instead of gatekeeping, because fashion is a super heavily gate kept industry, which like, I think a lot of creative industries are like that. But I was like, here's the inside scoop of who you're supposed to call, when you're supposed to show your collection. This is how you get in contact with buyers. This is how I suggest you start your creative process, and so on and so forth. We cover a lot of stuff, but it's been really cool. And I've been able to, initially when I wrote it, I thought it would serve as like a vehicle for me to expand my design and production consulting business. Like, I thought, I kind of hit a roadblock. Like, no one is coming to me and asking me to help them. What is the problem here? And it was like, oh, nobody knows my name. Like, I had, you know, it had been, I had been growing my business because of word of mouth. And then I was like, I have to put my voice on a megaphone, which is, you know, what I'm doing now. But I was like, I have to start getting my voice out there and have my voice and my face attached to my name and the overall brand so that people, and I felt like the book was the best vehicle to do that. And it's allowed me to, go and speak to like middle school and high school students. I'm working on getting some college. Oh, I'm speaking at a college next semester. But so the idea is to go out into classrooms at all levels and try to, to reach and expand my audience, to basically be like, hey, do you have this dream of wanting to be a fashion designer or working in the industry in some capacity? Here are the ways to do it. And I just reached a point where I felt it was time to share. And I like the idea of being an inspiration to people and throughout the book, it's very technical. Like, it's more like, it reads more like a textbook. Yeah. Like, do these things,
It's a masterclass.
Basically, it's a masterclass, just that I, put it into the book format. But I also get personal in it too and talk about some parts of my journey so that it feels human. It's not just like, it feels like a real person is telling you that this is what you should do. And I put in some inspirational quotes at the beginning of every chapter to just really get people going and get those creative juices flowing, but then also to inspire them, because I think that people can achieve anything they put their mind to, as cheesy as it sounds. I think that they just need to be, as long as they remain steadfast in their goals and remain determined. And so I hope the book also serves as a vehicle, or an example rather, for people to get out of their own way, because I feel like that's what I had to do. Like, I had to step out of my own way in order to step into my destiny. And I didn't realize part of my destiny was the book, but one day it clicked. And I was like, okay, this is what I've been sort of, you know, this is what I've been waiting to do. So it was just time.
Yeah, everybody needs to, if you have a dream and you have something that you're good at, you do need to share it. Often people bury their talents. Yeah. They bury their talents, but you've been given a God-given gift. You have to let the sun shine. You got to let people know about it. And, you know, it's interesting, though. I'm glad you're going out and speaking at schools, because home ec was a class that most young women took. I took it because my mom actually made me sew my own merit badges.
Oh, good. Yeah.
But then also I think it was when I was in seventh grade, she took me to Joann Fabric.
Yes.
And she taught me how to make a pair of shorts. Mm-hmm. So I got like these superhero fabrics and I followed the pattern.
Yep.
I had a couple friends make fun of me and I followed the pattern, but then I chose to wear them to school. So
good
guess
for
what?
You.
So guess what happened?
you got bullied.
No, no. Everyone wanted a pair of shorts.
Oh, I look at that.
So all of them that were interested, there were maybe, I don't know, 15, 20. Mm-hmm. I said, you have to go down to Joann's and then come over and my mom will show us how to do it.
Right.
We had the Jetsons, we had Smurfs, we had your favorite whatever. As seventh graders, people were wearing the knee-high shorts
I love it.
To school.
That's awesome. You were a trendsetter. That is so cool. I mean, I think the two things there that I took away were, one, I think everybody should have some skills. Like, you need to know how to cook. You need to know how to sew. Like, I feel like now we don't know how to do anything. I mean, we do, but you know, this younger generation, yeah. Like, they're just losing like those hands-on skills. And the other thing I took was how, again, going back to the power of fashion, like when you step out and choose to express yourself in some sort of wild way that's not the status quo, sometimes you may face someone being like, wow, that's super weird, but there's always gonna be somebody who like likes it. And then you turned it into sort of like a little business or like a class. So how cool is that? But the other thing that you had said that I wanted to touch on was about like sharing your God-given talents. Earlier this year, I was at a friend's house he's a R&B artist, and he had released like an EP, and it was something that he'd been talking about for a while, and I had heard him sing, and I was like, you are very, very talented. And I don't hand out compliments. That's just not my style. I give credit where credit is due, but nowhere else, because I just feel like, what's the point of that? But I had told him, I was like, are you going to release something? And he was like, yeah, but I'm a little bit scared, and da-da-da. And we had this like talk, and I was just like, listen, I understand that, but if you have a gift, you should share it with the world. And then, so that happened maybe like a year or so ago. And then earlier this year, I walked into his bathroom and he had a post-it note on his mirror and it said, I will use all of my God-given talents to make an impact on the world, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And I took a mental note, or I think I took an actual photo of it, but I remember being like, wow, that's such a good way to put that. Like, and I'm going to do the same thing, that I was like, I have all of these talents that I need to be sharing with the world. And I have, but I never had done it to the level that I know that I know inside myself that I'm capable of. So I was like, you know, you need to just step out of your way in order to step into your destiny and to live up to your full potential. Because I feel like the only person that you're disappointing if you don't do that is yourself. Like, yay the world, you know, but they don't know. Like, if I never told anybody that I had the talents, they wouldn't know. I'm the one that has to look
at
myself in the mirror every morning and know, like, am I giving it 100% or am I phoning
that's
it
right.
in? I was phoning it in. So, like, it's time to give 100%. But
it's totally true.
yeah, that particular note really stuck with me. And I think people are often scared. So, and I think when you don't succeed, whatever, you know, we all have different definitions of success, but I think the barrier to that often is just fear. And I hope that, you know, my book or anything that I say inspires people to move past their fear and take that leap of faith, whatever the case may be, and put themselves out there, just like you did with your superhero shorts. You put yourself out there and it turned out good. And anybody who made fun of you, I don't know where they are today, but they're not here. There's there it is.
Their dad's an attorney and they're a copyright infringement lawyer. So that's the only,
Right.
So, okay. Okay, so here's a question for you. Sure. You don't just become a fashion designer overnight. Where were you and how old were you when you realized or had this dream? Is there a specific date that you can remember?
There is. So I've known that I wanted to be a fashion designer since I was 4. And it was like a very, very clear moment that I will like never forget. It was actually like one of the first childhood memories that I had. Like, you know how we start feeling like you don't remember when you're like 4 or so. So I was at church and this woman like had on this like fabulous red outfit and she caught the Holy Spirit and was just like shouting and doing all this stuff. And it was, the dress had like a lot of frills and pleats and it was just fabulous. And the whole time I was like not concerned at all about the Holy Spirit or whatever. And I just remember like I like drowned out all the noise and all I could focus on was this dress. Mm. And then I like sprinted. Well, I didn't sprint home. I sprinted to the parking lot. We drove home. And then when I got home, I tried to draw the dress from memory.
Wow.
I sat down at my desk. I remember cleared it out. I like, you know, took like a colored pencil or whatever. And I always would draw. To this day, I still sketch like this. I only draw my first sketches on printer paper. Because that's how I did it when I was young.
I love that.
Would take printer paper from like my mom's office, whatever, come back to my room and I would just lay it out and I tried to draw the dress from scratch. And then every time, you know, that went on for a while, but I would like, I even one time like built a flat paper mannequin, if you will, so that I could draw on the mannequin. So I asked my mom to help me with like the proportions of a woman's body when I was 4. So that was an interesting that was an interesting conversation to have. She's like, why? I was like, oh, because I wanted to like, draw a dress. And so I've been sketching forever. I've been sketching since I could, you know, and then since I could color. And I've always been very artistically sort of inclined. And,
I don't know. You're fine. It's recess.
Let me just do something. One sec. Okay, there we go. That shouldn't happen.
So then your mom was from the beginning totally on board.
She was supportive. Yeah, exactly. Like she's supportive. I remember maybe I was like 6 or 7 and she was like, I would just, you know, I'd do my sketches and then I would show them to her. Like she was my audience and like, look what I did today kind of thing. Yeah. And she's like, why do you always, you know, one time she asked me, like, why do you always draw these? Like, why are you obsessed with drawing women's dresses? It was her question. I was like, I'm really good at it and I love it. And this is the way that like I take inspiration from whatever's happening in my life or something that I saw out in like nature or architecture or an experience I had at school or something. Yeah. And I try to, some people paint landscapes. Some people paint, you know, some people are architecture. Some people are pianists. Some people sing. And for me, the visual, the way that I express myself through visual art was through sketching. And so my dresses sometimes like were very conceptual and other times they were like very literal, like this is a dress, but other times it'd be like sort of like fantastic or sort of like ethereal where I'm trying to explain some feeling that I'm having in my head.
Yeah.
But the only way, my medium was dresses. And for years I just sketched and then there came a time in college where my professor was like, okay, these sketches are really beautiful, but like, we do need to teach you how to make some of these garments. But yeah, so I mean, for me, it was when I was 4 and I lived in New York at the time. And I remember one summer, I don't remember how close it was to when I had this realization that I wanted to do this, but we were driving in Manhattan because both my parents worked in Manhattan and we drove past the Fashion Institute of Technology. Mm. And I just looked out the window and I said to myself, like, I will be going to that school. Or I don't remember what I if I remembered what the name of the school was, but I saw the word fashion. And I was like, what is that? They're like, oh, it's a school where people who want to become fashion designers go. And then I started to notice that school name in a lot of famous fashion designers, their bios. Because one thing I'm obsessed, a side note about me, I'm obsessed with like autobiographies, whether that be
books. Me too.
I love reading about other people's lives.
You can learn so much more.
So much. Yeah. I'm like, I love reading about someone else, especially like someone who I'm inspired by, like to get sort of like peel back the curtain and see who they really are. But the through line with all the fashion designers was that they either went to FIT or Parsons. And so I saw the school I passed was Fashion Institute of Technology, FIT, but I ended up going to Parsons I went to University of Richmond for undergrad and I studied studio art. And then I went to Parsons and studied fashion design. And it was a dream come true, but it was a dream that I committed to myself. I was like, I don't care what happens in my life. I am going to Parsons and no one is going to stop me, because basically for me, it was just like all of these other people did it. So why would not? Like, it seems like it works. So why would I not follow that path? And so I like basically just copied. I basically like made a plan for my life based on who my favorite designer was and what they. Yeah. So
that's what you have to do. You have to pattern your life after a hero of some kind. So which is who is your favorite fashion designer of all time? I mean, who is it?
Yeah. So actually, I don't know if you can see, but behind me, how do we do this? Yeah, there we go. The book, Alexander McQueen, Savage Beauty.
Okay.
So Alexander McQueen is my favorite designer by a distance. I actually talk about that a little bit in my book, because a lot of my aesthetic was, I sort of developed my design aesthetic based on a lot of his collections. My second favorite is John Galliano, specifically when he was the creative director for Dior. I just like fell in love with one of his collections and was like, I'm learning a little bit more as an adult what he had to go through in order to access that level of beauty and talent. And I don't necessarily need to go through those things, but I was so inspired by it, because I was like, there's something like dark and beautiful about it. Like that sort of like duality of like, this is super, super intense. And you know, it comes from a place of like hurt or pain that he's trying to sort of, he's trying to negotiate within himself, but then through the work, like his media, is fashion, but it's the way that he processes. And so I've just been like super inspired by their work, their life stories, and their path. So
it's hard with artists. People don't understand it unless you are an artist. I mentioned this the other day on a Instagram post, is that Beethoven knew there was something in him, but the painful thing was he couldn't figure out how to get it out.
Yes.
And so we torture ourselves and people are going, what's the matter? Are you okay? Have you had enough sleep? No, we're on the verge of creating something. We just don't know how to, it's in there. Yeah. We don't yet know the full details, but it's about to, you know, it's like Michelangelo with the Sistine Chapel.
Oh my God. I've been to the Sistine Chapel and I cried the entire entire 15 minutes they allow you to be in there, but
silencio.
They're like, do not talk and no cameras. I mean, I hope that nobody at the Sistine Chapel is listening, because I certainly did take a photo.
Everyone
takes a photo. I was like, it's not going to have a flash, but I have an iPhone and I have a finger that works. So I'm going to take a photo. I'm not leaving here and, you know, having this be a myth that I came here. But thinking about like that level of creativity and also kind of like insanity that you have to like be okay with to tap into that level of high creativity. You're so right about that part about, you know, when other people who are not artists can't understand like what's going on. I'm like, girl, because I'm on the verge of a breakthrough, just leave me alone. Like, I'm almost there. I talk about this in my book too, that when I was on the way to, I had won this research grant from my school, and part of it was that I got to travel to museums and fashion exhibitions across the United States. And one of them was the Alexander McQueen Savage Beauty exhibition at, which was in 2011, the summer of 2011. And I had to drive from Virginia to New York. And I drove at night because that's just like what I did. Like I like a night road trip.
Yeah.
But that night it was like raining, like torrential downpour.
Poetic.
It was poetic, but this was the kicker. I hydroplaned, and I talked about this at the Wix event, but I like spun off the highway three times, and then I landed, and somehow I wasn't dead, and I was like, okay, like I had an out of body experience, like for real, like I like witnessed the whole thing happen, but then
I remember you talking about it.
Yeah, once my body like came to and was like, oh, we're still here. Okay, slam the brakes. But then I was like off. I had like flown into like the woods. Like it was a hot mess. Like I flew off the highway.
Oh no, and into the woods.
Into the woods. And so, but then I landed and I was like, okay, like catch your breath, whatever. My car was jacked up, but I was personally not. Thank goodness for my seatbelt, whatever, all that. And so then I was like, I don't know. I think I had like 4 more hours left on the journey. And I still just like, I took my moment to relax, get my nerves together, called a couple of friends, and they were like, you're going to be okay. And then I just kept driving. And I was like, I'm going to see this exhibition one way or the other. And it made the experience when I got there the next morning so much more like intense and also like meaningful that I was like, okay, like this truly is my destiny, because there's no reason why I needed to, sorry, my mic almost just fell, but there was no reason why I should have survived that accident.
Right.
Like, I look back at it and I can talk about it very calmly now, but in the months afterwards, I was like in therapy for like post-traumatic stress and all this stuff. And I never had had, I guess, an experience that affected me that much. But like I couldn't focus in class. Like they had to, one time I like, they had to pull me out. They were like, you need to go rest for like a week because you're clearly like dealing with something and you need to talk to someone. And I did. And then I ended up producing, after I processed it with a therapist, then I allowed myself to really go deep into how terrifying the situation was.
Yeah.
And then I made a collection that was like an exploration of like life and death, mortality, my own mortality, but then also like what it looks like for other people, like how I have always understood life and how I've always thought about death, but you never had a new vision of it having come so close. And then I created an 18-piece collection that was all about that accident. And I you know, I needed to work through it in a creative way.
Yeah.
But that's like to this day, like one of my best creative outputs, because it was so close to something so tragic. And so I always say that when I try to talk to other designers, I always say that your whole life experience can be your inspiration. Like, and even if you have things that happen negative to you, like life is not a fairy tale. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know anybody who has had
a sailing
life. And so you can, I feel like artists often, the best creative output that they have is after something horrific. But I always
definitely
I like the title of the collection, which is Savage Beauty. Like you can see like the roughness and the tragedy wrapped up in the beauty.
I bet it's amazing. My dark humor kicks in.
Oh, I have a very dark
humor. I'm like, I wonder if there's a book on what they were wearing.
OMG scandals.
when they passed.
What was the outfit?
Like, is the trauma you were going with, Kadeem, the fact that you were not wearing something amazing you almost passed?
Maybe that's why I'm here today, because I was like in sweats. Like I'm not going out wearing sweats.
But in the other world, they may give you that beautiful red dress white, the woman was wearing when you were 4 years old.
Yes, she's waiting to give it to me. You know what's so fun? Yeah, that's actually crazy that I always joke with people, like if someone has annoyed me or we need to have like a serious conversation, I always come dressed in black. And they're like, why are you wearing black? I'm like, oh, I'm dressed for a funeral. Yours. I always say that I'm coming dressed to kill, honey, but I often do wear black, but I'll wear, like, if I'm about to enter like a very serious business meeting, I also wear black because I'm like, I am here because I need to like murder the situation. So I'm like dressed for a funeral.
Is that what black represents? Because I wear black all the time, and that's because I love Johnny Cash, and Johnny Cash said, you know, I have to wear black because it represents the downtrodden.
Yeah.
And I mean,
for me, it's just like a canvas. Like, it's my uniform. Like, a lot of people in fashion wear black because then it's like, you're less, if you see me, yes, my outfit is fabulous, but you're less trying to figure out why I put that print with this print or that color with that color. It's just like, I'm black head to toe, and you can, and you're focused on my creativity and my output, not what I'm wearing. So, yeah.
Okay, you just explained me in a nutshell right there.
Yeah, there you go.
no focus on me. All the focus is on the feeling people get with the music, feeling. You know. Just don't play it backwards. And we'll be
fine. Oh, God. Literally, not Stairway to Heaven or whatever that one was.
Right. So, okay, so people can get your book, mm-hmm. Threading the Needle, Taking Your Artistic Vision from Initial Concept to Market. And I love the fact that you read your own book in the audiobook.
Yeah.
Because when somebody else is reading it, it just, you know, there's something personal about it. So I'm glad that's available.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that process was really great. Shout out to Indigo Soul New York. They were the Indigo Soul NYC, sorry. They were the people who helped me record it. Okay. And coincidentally, they were part of my sort of creative process in sort of stepping out on faith to talk about the work, and in a workshop that I did with them led me to be inspired to write the book. But
beautiful.
Yeah, no, I had to do an audiobook by myself. It's a really difficult process, but because you have to like read every sentence like 10 times. No one told me that. I thought I was going to just rock up, read the book. If I had a slip up, then we just edit it. But you have to make it so it's like perfect. Your tone has to be good. Then like, I learned so much. Like at this point, I could record an album. I'd be fine. But my thought process on that is that I, like later on when I write my memoirs, which we're a long way from that, but I want to narrate those too.
Yeah.
And hopefully at that point, I'm like, well known, you know, my sort of fame has risen to the level where my audiobook would be in Grammy contention. Mm-hmm. I just like am obsessed with the idea that you could just win a Grammy from reading a book. But
but I love your thought process and people, listeners, this is a thing. Kadeem is teaching us right off the bat. You have to put it out there. This is what you envision for yourself. You know, you experienced it early on. You knew this was the gift that was going to help shape the world, offer your smile through everybody, through your heartache and pain, your joys and all those things. But that's the beauty of it all. Yeah. That is the beauty of it all. So I encourage everybody to check out the book. And I'm going to put in the show notes your website.
Okay.
And then I'll link to your Instagram. Okay. Is there anything else that we should put there?
I appreciate that. You can find me on Instagram at k_alphanso, and that will link you to all of my other sites and collection. Okay. And then the book, Threading the Needle, A Fashion Designer's Guide to Successfully Launching Your First Collection, that's available on Amazon as an ebook, paperback, and of course, the self-narrated audiobook. That's pretty much it. I mean, you can find me. I have a very unique name. I'm the only Kadeem Alphonso Fight there is. So type me into Google and you'll figure out where you can find me. And I'm just like so happy to engage with your audience.
Yeah, Kadeem. Well, we love you, man.
Thank you.
We had such a good time. I had such a good time at the Wix conference.
Yeah, that was so cool.
Our mutual friend, JD Netto.
Yes, shout out to JD.
Shout out to JD, the author of The Broken Miracle. That's a guy that understands with audiobooks and books.
He understands everything.
Write it. Oh, he's a smart dude.
He's so talented. Yeah, I'm like, that's another like super serendipitous moment. Like I met him at my book launch through a friend that I had met at a gala the year before, and he was just like, you need to meet this person, and we clicked instantly. And then he was like, oh, I have this opportunity coming up. That's how I learned about you and how we all got to meet up, and now we're doing this.
So it's beautiful.
You know, it just goes to show that if you just put, you know, you can manifest things, and then people will put in your life that you need to meet.
Yeah, God opens the doors.
Oh, for sure, all the doors are open.
Welcome. Yeah, it's welcome home, everybody. So, hey, well, thank you so much. And so I'm going to end the recording, but what happens next is you have to wait for your portion to upload.
Okay, sure.
So just keep it open. So
no worries. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I'm so happy I got to do this. Thanks.
And this will come out probably in December.
Okay. Sounds good.
So people will be thinking red.
Good.
Did you know the best way to support your favorite musician is to bypass social media and go to their website and subscribe to their mailing list? Going directly to the artist's website ensures you and the artist will have no third party controlling your relationship. It's a direct contact. Please show your support, particularly for our host. Go to Paul's website and subscribe, followed by other artists you enjoy. Visit www.paulcardall.com. Not only is Paul a podcast host, but has gifted the world with award-winning music that's brought comfort to millions of listeners in more than 160 nations. His latest album, Return Home, is an introspective listening experience. Each song, carefully crafted, takes listeners on a cinematic journey to the lands of his ancestors. In all, Return Home features 13 songs, from his original piano pieces, Shropshire Hills, Immigrant Ships, The Shores of Normandy, Red Poppy Fields, Fathers and Daughters, Eliza's Theme, to arrangements of popular hymns, I Believe in Christ and Love One Another. Whether you just need to relax, study, meditate, pray, or for some other healthy reason, Paul's music helps create an atmosphere of peace wherever you are. Add Paul Cardall's album Return Home to your favorite platform, whether it's iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, or some other. For the sheet music and more information, visit www.paulcardall.com.